Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, November 7th, 2018. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Washington voters reject carbon fee, and Washington voters approve semi-automatic gun restrictions and ban on local food taxes and redefinition of use of deadly force by police. Idaho voters pass Proposition 2 to expand Medicaid. Nelson, Troy, and Gosling win in Idaho District 5 legislative races. Brad Little wins governor's race against Paulette Jordan. Mary Dye and Joe Schmick win District 9 legislative races in Eastern Washington. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Washington voters rejected Initiative 1631, which would have levied a $15 per ton fee on many sources of carbon pollution to help fight climate change. As of late last night, with the vast majority of the votes accounted for, 56.3% voted against the initiative and 43.7% voted for it. I-1631 passed with 57% of the vote in King County, the state's most populous county. It was failing in most of Washington's other 38 counties. The Spokesman Review reports the fee would have been assessed on crude oil and other fossil fuels refined into gasoline, diesel, or heating oil. Drivers could have had an extra 12 cents per gallon added to the price of their gasoline at the pump in 2020, with increases of 2 to 3 cents per gallon annually as the fee rose. Utilities using natural gas or coal to generate electricity and natural gas suppliers also would have been assessed the fee. The State Office of Financial Management said the carbon fees would have collected an estimated $2.3 billion in the first 5 years for the state coffers. 70% of the money would have gone to clean air and water projects, with 20% going to conservation and forest preservation, and 10% going to low-income assistance. The campaign against I-1631, mainly funded by major oil companies, was the most expensive in Washington's history, with no campaign raising $31.5 million as of Friday, spending most of it on ads delivered by mail and a flood of television ads hammering the rising costs of gasoline and utility bills. The ads also said some industries that produce carbon pollution in the state would have been exempt from the fee. The Yes campaign was unable to match that, generating $15.6 million with seven-figure donations from the Nature Conservancy, the League of Conservation Voters, Michael Bloomberg, and Bill Gates. They recruited medical professionals to warn about the health hazards of carbon pollution and environmentalists to talk about burning forests, rising sea levels, and other projected dangers of global climate change. This is not the first time Washington voters rejected a fossil fuel tax. In 2016, voters rejected a carbon tax, which would have been coupled with a cut in the state's sales tax in an effort to be revenue neutral. Washington voters approved Initiative 940, which tightens laws regulating the use of deadly force by police officers. It passed with overwhelming support. A strong showing in Western Washington made I-940 a sweeping success, with over 60% of the voters statewide casting their votes in favor of I-940. The passage of the initiative means it will be easier to bring criminal charges against police officers who wrongfully use deadly force. In a statement, officials from the I-940 campaign said, "Washington becomes the first state in the nation to pass a police training and accountability measure in response to a national conversation about use of force and the relationships between law enforcement and the community they serve." I-940 requires de-escalation and mental health training for police, obligates officers to administer first aid to a victim of deadly force, and requires an independent investigation into the use of deadly force. Described as one of the most sweeping new gun laws in the country, Initiative 1639 passed yesterday in Washington, and it will put new restrictions on the sale of semi-automatic rifles and require guns be kept in the home, safely stored. The initiative passed easily last night, despite opposition from many eastern Washington counties. It narrowly passed in Spokane County with 52% of voters supporting it. Although the ballot title for the initiative refers to semi-automatic assault rifles, the actual text of the measure makes no distinction between rifles with certain military features like pistol grips or flash suppressors and more standard hunting rifles. So-called assault rifles, a general term for AR-15s, have been used in many mass shootings, including the recent Tree of Life Synagogue massacre in Pittsburgh. Starting in December, a buyer of any semi-automatic rifle will have to be 21 rather than the current age of 18 and pass a more thorough background check. Supporters say the change merely puts the rifles on par with handguns, which have similar requirements in Washington. Opponents say it's unconstitutional age discrimination against people who are old enough to serve in the military, marry, and sign contracts, but won't be able to buy a rifle that can fire a round each time the trigger is pulled. Single-shot, bolt-action, and lever-action rifles are not covered in the initiative. The Safe Schools, Safe Communities organization raised about $5.3 million overall for the campaign, with big donations from the late Paul Allen and venture capitalist Nick Hanauer and his wife Leslie. The National Rifle Association backed the opposition campaign, sending it about $600,000. Workers easily gathered signatures to qualify the initiative for the ballot, but I-1639 had a bumpy road getting to voters, with opponents challenging the changes to state law, saying they weren't properly printed on the petitions. Washington Secretary of State Kim Wyman said there were questions raised about the petitions, but she had no authority to reject them. Opponents have promised to mount another court challenge to the passed initiative. The supporters of I-1639 raised over $5.3 million, while the opponents, with the National Rifle Association as the most prominent donor, raised about $600,000. Washington voters approved Initiative 1634, the ban on local grocery and soda taxes. Local governments looking for more tax money will have to look somewhere else than sugary drinks and other grocery items. Best described as a prophylactic measure, I-1634 will prevent local governments from levying taxes like the Seattle soda tax, although none are currently on the horizon, and it does not repeal the Seattle measure. The initiative had a grandfather clause allowing the Seattle soda tax to remain in effect. After passage, proponents staked their campaign on preventing cities or counties from passing taxes on all groceries, citing the negative effect that it would have on working families. Supporters were unable to find a single instance of a local tax that targeted meat, vegetables, fruit, or other grocery items that weren't tied to soda or sugary drinks. The Yes on Affordable Groceries campaign raised $20 million, with all but $23,000 coming from big soda companies like Coca-Cola, Pepsi, Dr. Pepper, and Red Bull. No contributions came from individual Washington residents, but the initiative did enjoy support from many of the state's business groups. Opponents raised about $33,000, mainly from groups like the Child Obesity Prevention Coalition and the American Cancer Society. Idaho voters approved Proposition 2, the initiative to expand Medicaid coverage to an estimated 60,000 low-income Idahoans yesterday. For years, Idaho legislators refused to expand Medicaid, even though it would have saved the state money. Those opposed mostly argued the federal government could change the funding formula sometime in the future, leaving the state with an unfunded program. Voters saw things differently, with 60% of voting for Proposition 2. During the last 4 years, legislators also failed to pass other bills that would have increased access to health care, including those in the GAP population. Medicaid expansion will cover those who earned too much to qualify for Medicaid under Idaho's current criteria, but didn't earn enough to get subsidized health insurance coverage under the state health insurance exchange. Dubbed Idaho's GAP population, patients were often left with no way to access basic medical treatment. Instead, they were left to rely on expensive emergency room visits as untreated health problems became a crisis. The American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network celebrated the passage of Proposition 2, saying it will allow more Idaho residents to access basic preventable care like cancer screenings. In a prepared statement, Luke Kavanagh of the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network said, "In fact, the biggest determining factor whether someone survives after a cancer diagnosis is whether they have health insurance." Kavanagh went on to say, "With the passage of Proposition 2, we take a big leap in the fight against this devastating disease." Opponents have said expanding Medicaid coverage would force the state to pull money from other needs like education and infrastructure. They have also argued allowing able-bodied, low-income adults access to Medicaid coverage would serve as a financial shortcut for some rather than expecting them to come up with ways to cover their own health care costs. But proponents say Medicaid expansion will ultimately drive state health care costs down by reducing the cost of indigent care borne by local governments and health care facilities. The state will kick in a portion of the funding, but the expansion will primarily be covered by federal tax dollars. Proponents say the state will save money because it will allow working low-income Idahoans to be healthier and able to contribute more to the economy and care for their families. Idaho has a unique relationship with the Medicaid system. The state already has a tax-funded system to pay for catastrophic health care on behalf of poor Idahoans. That money could be spent on Medicaid instead. Idaho Hospital Association member Tony Lawson said, "The funding is there. We just need to allocate it in the appropriate manner." Rural hospitals say Medicaid will ensure their survival. Other such hospitals around the country have closed their doors. The Idaho legislature will still need to approve the state's share of funding. Medicaid is a partly state-funded, mostly federally funded program. Idaho would be required to pay for a smaller share of the cost than it spends on existing Medicaid benefits. Republican Lieutenant Governor Brad Little easily won the Idaho governor's seat over Democratic challenger Paulette Jordan of Plummer. Little had 60% of the vote and Jordan had 38%, with the remaining 2% split between Libertarian Bev Beck and Walt Bays of the Constitution Party. Jordan won four counties, Latah, Ada, Blaine, and Teton. She had 56% of the vote in Latah County and a whopping 69% of the vote in Blaine County. If she had won, Jordan would have been the first female Idaho governor and the first Native American governor of any state. She was born and raised on the Coeur d'Alene Reservation. Little will replace outgoing Republican Governor Butch Otter when he takes office in January. Republican former state senator Russ Fulcher of Meridian won Idaho's first district congressional seat with 63% of the vote over Democrat and political newcomer Christina McNeil, who had 31%. In the second district race, Republican incumbent Mike Simpson also had 61% of the vote over his opponent, Democrat Aaron Swisher. Republicans won all the statewide seats in Idaho. Incumbent Secretary of State Lawrence Denny had 61% of the vote over Democrat Jill Humble. Republican Attorney General Lawrence Wasdin had 61% of the vote over Democrat Bruce Bisline. And Republican Lieutenant Governor candidate Janice McGeachin had 58% of the vote over Democrat Kristen Cullum. Incumbent Republican Sherry Ibarra won the state superintendent of public instruction race 12 hours after the polls closed, with her opponent, Democrat Cindy Wilson, leading most of the night. We'll have more on that in a moment. You're listening to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman. Idaho's Legislative District 5, consisting of Layton and Benoit counties, will be represented by one Democrat and two Republicans during the next 2 years. Democratic challenger David Nelson of Moscow ousted one-term incumbent Republican Senator Dan Foreman of Viola with 57.5% of the vote. And Republicans Carolyn Troy and Bill Gosling won the two House seats in District 5. Nelson's race wasn't decided until 2 a.m. due to problems at the Latah County Courthouse, counting 4,700 absentee ballots from around the county. Nelson easily won the Latah County part of the district with 63% of the vote, but lost in Benoit County. Foreman was almost immediately controversial when he went to the legislature in Boise in 2017, quickly introducing a bill to charge abortion doctors and women who have abortions with murder, something opposed by Idaho's longstanding anti-abortion groups. Foreman quickly made waves because of his temper and seemingly fringe positions on issues. Medicaid expansion and health issues split the two candidates, with Nelson favoring Medicaid expansion and Foreman insinuating the legislature might withhold funding for Medicaid expansion even if it was approved by voters. I spoke with State Senator-elect Dave Foreman about his victory this afternoon.
I had to work a lot to win this race. I mean, I think Senator Foreman has had a lot of high negative name recognition, and that helped. But, you know, we door knocked on almost 10,000 doors in Latah County. We raised a lot of money to be able to be on the radio and on social media and news advertising. You know, we ran a campaign to not leave any stone unturned, and it worked. I mean, we did win. It was a 57.5 to 42.5% margin in the end. So I think it all paid off.
District 5's other two legislators will be Republicans, at least for the next 2 years, with incumbent Margie Gannon of St. Mary's losing. What are your thoughts on Bill Gosling over Gannon and incumbent Republican Carolyn Troy over Democrat Lorene Sorensen?
I was quite disappointed that Margie Gannon from St. Mary's didn't win. I think in this district, it's important that we have a representative from Benoit County as well as representatives from Latah County. And I think Margie had a very unique voice. So I'm disappointed not to be serving with Margie. I'm very amenable to working with Mr. Gosling and Ms. Nelson-Troy. I particularly would like to find a way to contribute on Ms. Nelson-Troy's work with suicide in Idaho. I think that's a significant problem. I mean, our suicide rate is, and many of the states in the West has a quite high suicide rate, and I'd like to help there. I've worked with Bill Gosling on many things around Moscow, including facilities levies, facilities bonds, school levies over the years, and I think we get along quite well and could work together. So I think the three of us together will be strong representatives for District 5.
Okay, I want to mention, like Paulette Jordan before you, you'll be the only elected Democrat in the legislature north of Riggins. What are your thoughts about that and the makeup of the legislature?
I think it is sad that for an area of the state that only 25, I think in 1992, every representative north of the Salmon River, except for one, was a Democrat. I wish we had more diverse representation up here as well as the whole state. I mean, Eastern Idaho is the same way. I can work with the Republicans. I think it's important that we not be harsh partisans and we find ways to work together to solve Idaho's problems. I mean, many of us want better education for our kids. We want a better educated workforce, which means investing in higher ed and workforce development. So I think we could work together to get common goals. And I'm a bit relieved that Proposition 2 passed with such a large margin. I think it will be very hard for the conservative legislators to try to put restrictions on it in any way or subvert to the will of the people. That would be a lot of arrogance to do that at this point.
Yeah, I noticed your opponent was saying that he was hinting that maybe the legislature might reverse it or fail to fund expand the Idaho's part of expanding Medicaid. If he got elected,
I can't imagine either of those things happening now. You know, I think it's possible there might be a battle on a work requirement or some drug testing requirement, but I think both of those are ways to subvert the will of the people and really not deliver that medical care to those folks. So I would be fighting against those things.
And I suppose a lot of people who won elections this time around in the legislature were campaigning more on saying I will respect the will of the people once the results of Proposition 2 came in.
It seemed like in District 5 that was the case. I mean, it was really clear that Bill Gosling and me and Margie and Loreen Sorensen would support Medicaid expansion. Carolyn Nielsen-Troy, I think, has been pretty clear that she will not get in the way. She doesn't like it, but she won't subvert the will. Although I guess we'll see when the appropriation bills comes down. I mean, it would be really nice if health and welfare could move ahead, like almost immediately, to start doing Medicaid expansion. Right now, the reimbursement rate from the federal government is actually over 91%, and it drops about 1% in the next year. So if we can implement earlier, we save a lot. We do it at a cheaper rate. It can get people enrolled in the current enrollment period, and there's nothing stopping them from doing it. The implementation language just says they must start within 60 days.
That was Democrat David Nelson, who won the race for the District 5 Senate seat in the Idaho legislature. In the House seat 5A race, Republican Bill Gosling of Moscow got 51% of the vote against incumbent Democrat Margie Gannon of St. Mary's, who Lieutenant Governor Brad Little appointed to the legislature in March to replace Paulette Jordan, who resigned to pursue the governor's seat. Gannon won in Latah County with 52% of the vote, but lost the election due to most Benoit County voters favoring Gosling. In the House seat 5B race, it was another case of a Democrat winning Latah County but losing because of heavy Republican voting in Benoit County. Incumbent Republican Carolyn Troy of Genesee won with 54% of the vote against Democratic challenger Loreen Sorensen of Moscow. Sorensen won in Latah County with 51% of the vote. Sorensen's campaign was hampered when she used the German phrase Sieg Heil in a sarcastic manner last Thursday while criticizing the tendency of candidates to be smug about being from families that have lived in a particular area for generations. The race was a rematch of the 2016 race, which Troy won with 50.1% of the vote to Sorensen's 38.7%. There was a third candidate in 2016, independent Ken DeVries of St. Mary's, who got 11.3% of the vote. When the final votes were counted, Republican Superintendent of Public Instruction Sherry Ibarra won re-election in the closest statewide race in Idaho yesterday. Ibarra had 51.4% of the vote over Democrat Cindy Wilson, who had gathered support from a few prominent Republicans in the state. Wilson had been leading in returns most of the night, but by this morning, Ibarra had edged ahead. Wilson released a statement today saying, "Every child in Idaho deserves the highest quality education possible, and we should all work together to ensure that happens. I'm heartened at the phenomenal turnout in this election. My career has been spent advocating for participation in the democratic process, and I've been proud of the interest Idahoans, so many of them my former students, have taken in their democracy this year." Ibarra released a statement saying it was a late night punctuated by edge-of-your-seat anticipation, culminating with grateful relief in the early morning hours as the final counties began reporting their election results. "I spent this time with my family, friends, and campaign team. Sometime after 3 a.m., it became clear the voters of our great state had entrusted me with another term as Idaho Superintendent of Public Instruction. I felt humble, thankful, and honored." Ibarra will serve a second four-year term in the position. In Latah County races, Democrat Kathy LaFortune of Viola won over Republican Tony Johnson, also of Viola, in the race for Commission Seat 1. LaFortune had 54.4% of the vote. In the race for County Commission Seat 3, Republican incumbent Dave McGraw of Troy easily won over Democratic challenger Carrie Scott of Moscow. LaFortune will serve a two-year term, and McGraw will serve a two-year term. The third Latah County Commission seat is held by Democrat Tom Lamar, who has 2 years remaining in his term. In the race for County Treasurer, Democrat B.J. Swanson won over Republican Peggy Gottschalk with 54.5% of the vote. Democrat Rod Wakefield won the Latah County Assessor's race with 56% of the vote over Republican Annette Biegler. Coroner Catherine Mabbott, a Democrat, ran unopposed. In one of the more closely watched U.S. House races in the country, Republican Kathy McMorris-Rodgers won 56% of the vote over Democrat and former state senator Lisa Brown in Washington's 5th Congressional District. It was the tightest race yet for McMorris-Rodgers, who will now serve an eighth term. During the campaign, Brown criticized McMorris-Rodgers' votes to end the Affordable Care Act while in Congress, while McMorris-Rodgers insisted she wanted to replace it with something different and also insisted she was not against higher insurance rates for people with pre-existing conditions, although Brown maintained her House votes would have done just that. Brown had traction in the race but could not overcome McMorris-Rodgers' Republican base in the large, highly rural district that includes the city of Spokane. The two candidates battled it out and raised a total of $10 million between them for the race. Democrat Maria Cantwell is on the verge of victory over her opponent, former Washington Republican Party Chair Susan Hutchison. Cantwell had about 60% of the vote as of late Tuesday night. The 60-year-old Cantwell is seeking her fourth term in the U.S. Senate. While in the Senate, she has served on the Energy and Natural Resources, Commerce, Finance, and Indian Affairs committees. She has criticized big oil companies for raising gasoline taxes. Cantwell had more funding and recognition. She supports the Affordable Care Act and opposes Trump's tax cuts. Incumbent Republican State Representatives Joe Schmick and Mary Dye kept their Washington House seats in the largely rural 9th Legislative District last night. The district includes the cities of Pullman, Clarkston, Assotin, Colfax, and Ritzville. Schmick, who lives in Colfax, defeated his Democratic challenger Matthew Sutherland of Pullman with 64.4% of the vote. District 9 voters first sent Schmick to the House in 2007. Sutherland is a graduate student at Washington State University. Republican incumbent Mary Dye of Pomeroy won over Democrat Jen Goulet of Pasco with 67.7% of the vote. Dye was appointed to her House seat in 2015 and elected to the position in 2016. She manages a wheat farm near Pomeroy. Her opponent, Jen Goulet, is a Sanders Democrat and owns a small business. The race was a repeat of the 2016 race, also won by Dye. I spoke to Mary Dye last night after her victory became apparent. So it looks like you got 68% of the vote so far in District 9 for the Washington Legislative House seat against your opponent, Jen Goulet. So you're thinking that there's not going to be enough uncounted ballots in Whitman County to overcome.
That's my thought. Of course, I haven't done the actual math, certainly feel confident that, you know, if trends continue, and obviously it was a tremendous turnout, and I'm very, very grateful, extremely grateful to the voters that they had confidence in the work that we started, and I'm really enthusiastic to continue working toward the projects that we were started to work on.
Do you have any idea what the makeup of the legislature will be after tonight as far as Republicans versus Democrats?
You know, I haven't added it up. I'm sure that we'll have closer looks at it as, you know, the counting continues throughout the end of the week and when they certify. But, you know, we are going to be a deeper minority in Olympia in terms of the Republican vote caucus. But it's still yet to be determined. A lot of those races are razor thin between just a few votes between the two candidates. And so I think it's going to be a while before we know for certain what the final outcome is.
Okay. It sounds like you expect an uphill battle on most of the issues important to you in the legislature, Washington being a progressive state and going along with the blue wave somewhat tonight.
Right. It's really that the bills that get heard are going to be topics that aren't particularly relatable to the people that work in Eastern Washington and work in natural resource and manufacturing-based industries. And so, you know, it obviously poses a significant existential threat to people who are energy-dependent and export-driven, market-oriented industries. And so, you know, it is a bigger challenge to protect those interests and to make sure that, you know, their voices are heard and understood the real need that we have in Eastern Washington to be able to continue to grow crops and deliver them to global markets, to be able to expand our industrial base and create the kind of jobs that give good family wages and give entrepreneurial opportunities for people that want to establish in rural parts of the state.
And it sounded like you made an allusion to the carbon fee in the last statement. From what I'm hearing, that's going down to defeat, right?
It is. And, you know, it's more than that. I mean, it's, you know, we've seen in the recent week that ARCA Task Force really pushing their agenda forward on the dam removal as being an option. And, you know, that is our I-5 corridor for Eastern Washington. That's how we get our commerce to the global market. And removing that very critical freight transportation mode would be an existential threat to all of the industries that utilize that river, both directions, import and export. And, you know, it's the idea that, you know, our train transport of our goods and services across Eastern Washington often contains materials that are out of favor with Westside progressives. For example, our coal and oil transport. Those types of things become very dicey. When you look at a millennial bulk terminal that went through all of the permitting, took them 9 years to do so, and with the stroke of a pen, eliminated the potential for 7,000 jobs in the Longview-Kelso area, an area that's been economically depressed since the spotted owl. These pose real threats to the ability of families to be successful in communities that are dependent on natural resources, on energy-dependent industries, and on export-dependent industries.
And that was District 9 Washington House member Mary Dye, who won with 67.7% of the vote over Democrat Jen Goulet in yesterday's election. The 9th Legislative District covers Whitman, Adams, Assotin, Franklin, and Garfield counties and a portion of Spokane County. There is no District 9 Senate race this year. Washington Senate positions have four-year terms, and they are staggered depending on which district. Republican Mark Schessler of Ritzville has 2 years remaining in his term. He'll likely be Senate Minority Leader during the next legislative session. In Whitman County races, Republican incumbent Michael Largent won another term on the county commission with 59% of the vote over Democrat John Mark Monkey. Republican Sandy Jameson of Garfield won the county auditor's race with 64% of the vote over Democrat Eric Fedgerin of Pullman. Also in Whitman County, John Hart won the contested countywide district judge position 1 race over Rob Rembert with 66% of the vote. Incumbent Republican prosecuting attorney Dennis Tracy and independent county clerk candidate Jill Welchel ran unopposed. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. It will be mostly cloudy tonight, gradually becoming clear, low 23. Mostly clear skies tomorrow and tomorrow night, high 41, low 24. 30% chance of rain and snow showers after 5 p.m. Friday. Increasing clouds during the day on Friday, high 43. And a 40% chance of rain and snow showers before 9 p.m. Friday night. Then a chance of snow showers. Patchy fog, otherwise mostly cloudy, low 28. Little or no snow accumulation expected. And mostly clear through the weekend with some patchy fog. Early Sunday morning after 2 a.m., high both days 41, low Saturday night around 24, currently 37 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's KRFP 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. Coming up next, the weekly news magazine Between the Lines, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio, and also What's the Frequency, Kenneth, coming up at 8:30. We'll have Grateful Dead Through the Decades, and Wednesday night, Midweek Massacre Metal at 10 p.m. All here at KRFP Moscow Pullman. I'm Lee Robardis. Kurt Morrison and Philippe Muzichenko assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Programming on KRFP is supported in part by Moscow Ale House, home of the featured brewery parties. You can find Moscow Ale House at 226 West 6th Street or call 208-882-BREW. That's 208-882-2739.
For information on becoming a KRFP underwriter, go to krfp.org and click Support KRFP.